hunting thing down pat, but it turns out you can't get enough of it. So much so that you're wondering whether you could make this new job called fatherhood a full-time one. Especially if there are circumstances that have you questioning whether a return to the workforce makes financial or practical sense. Maybe your partner brings home the bigger paycheck or has the more stable job. Maybe maintaining a two-salary household doesn't stack up to the cost of childcare. Or you're more comfortable keeping childcare in the family. Or maybe you just can't imagine sitting at a desk all day when your heart's at home with your baby. Stay-at-home dads, known in social media circles by the somewhat unfortunate acronym SAD, there's nothing sad about a stay-at-home dad, are a growing trend. Around 2 million dads are primary caregivers for their kids these days, either full-time or part-time. And as the sight of a dad snuggling his cutie in a baby carrier while pushing a shopping cart filled with groceries has become more commonplace, society, and even the media, has become more accepting of this new reality, even embracing it. Still, this switch in traditional roles is not without its challenges, and you're sure to face a few bumps along the stay-at-home parenting road. Some similar to those felt by moms, but others unique to you and fellow SADs. Here are some strategies to navigate those challenges so you can get the most out of your stint as a stay-at-home dad. Find other SADs. Stay-at-home parents, both moms and dads, often feel isolated. After all, the transition from interacting with adults all day, in full sentences, to interacting with a newborn whose communication skills are limited to breathy coos or high-pitched wails can be difficult. You may have someone to talk to, but no one to talk with. That sense of isolation may extend to playgrounds and playgroups, which tend to be mom-heavy, or even mom-exclusive, leaving SADs, who'd like to become involved, feeling out of the loop. Instead of staying on the outside looking into stay-at-home social circles, try being more proactive in reaching out and connecting. Look for SAD groups in your area, or create one yourself. Turn to online dad groups for advice, support, and a place to vent with guys who have also traded in their briefcase for a diaper bag. Don't write off the mamas, though. Mingling with SAMs, who are dealing with many of the same parenting challenges as you are, can also be part of your support system. Trust yourself. If you're taking over from mom after her maternity leave has lapsed, you may find yourself wondering what she would do in a certain situation, how she would handle this feeding issue or that crying jag. Sure, it makes sense to tap into any baby lessons she has already learned, and to segue into full-time daddy care with a minimum of major changes in schedule and parenting protocol. Babies typically aren't fans of change. But it's just as important that you carve out your own caregiving identity, rather than just trying to morph into hers. Mom may have that special touch when it comes to massage, but your colic hold is all yours, and so epically effective, you may need to think about a patent. Just remember, parenting doesn't always come naturally to moms or dads. Learning the ropes of baby care takes time, and how much time it takes is completely unrelated to a parent's gender. It's a job that's best learned on the job. Listen to that little voice inside. Instincts, you have them too. And you'll discover everything you need to know and gain the confidence you need to trust yourself. Make sure you and mom are on the same page. Setting clear expectations up front will reduce conflict and the potential for resentment, as when one parent feels he or she is carrying the heavier load. So talk about it. Together, decide which chores fall to which parent, even charting them at first to make sure responsibilities are accounted for equitably. Is one parent doing the grocery shopping, the other doing the cooking? Is baby laundry all you, picking up the dry cleaning all her? Is breakfast duty a joint effort, bath time a job for two, too? Who does nights, and who does what on the weekends? Be specific, but also be prepared to be flexible as babies' needs change, or when schedules shift or roles evolve. Open communication and compromise are both key to a successful parenting partnership, but especially when roles are being defined, or redefined. Speak up, too. If you find mom tends to micromanage too much, even as she leaves you home with the ultimate, if cutest, responsibility, remind her gently, but as needed, that her input is welcome, but that she'll need to hover less and trust you more, allowing you to make your own decisions and, like any parent, make your own mistakes. But don't get so carried away running with the responsibility that you start feeling like you run the parenting show entirely. This is a partnership, after all. Find time for yourself. Everyone needs some me time occasionally to prevent burnout, and SADs are no exception. Look for ways to give yourself a break while still caring for your little one, such as taking advantage of the gym's free babysitting services so you can stay in shape while staying on dad duty, taking up a hobby that you can do with your baby in tow, or volunteering with baby. Look to the future. Your job as dad may be a full-time one now, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't consider what the future might look like. Continue to network with colleagues and stay up to date as things change in your area of expertise. Now, while baby's still taking naps, might also be a good time to take an online course or two to expand your future career horizons, or just keep your skills strong. Own it. Even with the number of SADs on the rise, you'll still get plenty of curious looks at the playground and clueless comments. Cool, dude, you're off every day. But don't let outdated, unenlightened social views, reinforced by ridiculous media images of hopelessly hapless dads, get you down. No matter what brought you to your status as stay-at-home dad, financial or otherwise, you've made a decision that works for you and your family, and you should be proud to call yourself a SAD.
Never shake a baby. Some parents assume that shaking a baby is safer than hitting as a way to let off steam when they're frustrated or angry, at the nonstop crying, for instance, or as a way to discipline their little one, such as when baby won't sleep or stop crying. But that's an extremely dangerous assumption to make. First of all, babies are too young to be disciplined effectively. Second of all, physical discipline of any kind, including spanking, is never appropriate. But most important of all, shaking, jostling, or vigorously bouncing a baby, whether in anger or fun, can cause serious injury or death. Never, ever shake a baby. All about the right child care for baby.
Does the thought of leaving your precious, sweet, and oh-so-new bundle in someone else's care have you second-guessing whether you should ever leave your baby at all? Of course it does, especially the first time. After all, it's probably taken you, the people who love that little one more than anyone else in the world, weeks, maybe months, to figure out how your baby works, what cries mean what calming techniques work and which don't, what sounds soothe and what sounds stress, the best way to pat out a burp. How can you expect someone else to pick up your baby's signals as sensitively and intuitively as you do? Be as caring, as concerned, as attentive, as responsive, as reliable as you, as focused on. Okay, make that a tad obsessed with your newborn. As capable of providing the stimulation that will make your baby's brain power and muscle skills grow. Able to concede that mom and dad know best when it comes to baby care philosophies, even if those philosophies are in direct contradiction with those practiced by the caregiver on her own babies or other people's babies. Or at least to accept that you're the last word on sleep, feeding, discipline, all of the above, and more. Separating from your little one, whether for a 9-to-5 job or a Saturday night dinner and a movie, will never be easy, especially the first few times you head out the door and leave baby behind. But knowing that you've left your precious, sweet, and oh-so-new bundle in the best possible hands will help ease your mind, your stress, and yes, maybe even some of the inevitable guilt. In-home care. Nobody can take your place with your baby, not ever, Not even close. Mommy or daddy care is the best care there is. But most experts agree that the next best thing to having a parent at home caring for a child is having a parent substitute, a nanny, babysitter, au pair, at home providing that care. The advantages of in-home care are many. Baby stays in familiar surroundings, complete with the comforting consistency of his or her own crib, high chair, and toys, isn't exposed to lots of other baby germs, and doesn't have to do any commuting. Instead of competing for attention with a room full of other little ones, baby has one-on-one care and a good chance of building a strong relationship with a single care provider. There are some potential drawbacks, though. Topping the list, cost. At-home care is usually the most expensive kind of childcare, especially if you choose a professionally trained nanny, possibly less so for an au pair, a college student, or someone with minimal experience. If the care provider is sick, unable to come to work for other reasons, for instance, a sick child of her own, or suddenly quits, there's no automatic backup system. A wonderfully strong attachment between the babysitter and an older baby may prove not so wonderful if the sitter leaves suddenly, or if mom or dad develops more than a mild case of envy. And finally, some parents find that having someone else in their home all day cramps their style and intrudes on their privacy, especially if that someone is living in. Starting the search. Finding the ideal care provider can be a time-consuming process, so if you can, allow as much as 2 months for the search. There are several trails you can take to track her or him down. Online. There are plenty of resources online to help jumpstart your search, from agencies you can hook up with to help wanted databases. Be sure to get recommendations from friends or colleagues who've used a particular online resource before logging on. The baby's doctor. Probably no one else you know sees as many babies and parents as your baby's doctor. Ask him or her for nanny recommendations. Check out the office bulletin board for notices put up by care providers seeking employment. Some pediatricians require that references be left at the reception desk when such notices are posted, or put up a notice of your own. Ask around the waiting room, too. Other parents. Don't pass one by at the playground, at a postpartum exercise class, at cocktail parties and business meetings, in line for coffee, without asking if they've heard of or have employed a good care provider. Ask around on local message boards, like the ones on whattoexpect.com. Your local community center, library, house of worship, preschool. Post on and check out the bulletin board, as well as message boards online. Teachers of toddlers and preschoolers. Early childhood teachers may be open to babysitting on nights and weekends, or may know of other experienced childcare workers. Nanny agencies and registries. Trained and licensed and usually expensive, childcare workers and nannies are available through these services, and selecting a care provider this way usually eliminates a lot of guesswork and legwork. But always interview and check references and background yourself anyway. You may have to pay a membership fee to access an agency or registry, and sometimes an agency percentage. Babysitting services. Screened babysitters are available through these services, many of them listed online, for full-time, part-time, or occasional work. A local hospital. Some hospitals offer babysitting referral services. Generally, all sitters referred have taken a babysitting course offered by the hospital, which includes baby CPR and other first aid procedures. At some hospitals and nursing schools, nursing or medical students may be available for babysitting jobs. Local parent papers. Check for ads run by care providers seeking employment, and/or run an ad yourself. College employment offices. part-time or full-time, year-round or summer help may be found through local colleges. Early childhood education or nursing students would make ideal candidates. Senior citizen organizations. Lively seniors can make terrific sitters and surrogate grandparents at the same time. Just make sure they've received training on new school baby care, first aid, and safety. Au pair or nanny organizations. These services can provide families with a live-in au pair, usually a young person from a foreign country who wants to visit or study in the United States for a year or so, or with a well-trained nanny. Settling on a job description. It'll be easier to find the right care provider if you know what you're looking for. So before you start sorting through job candidates, settle on a job description. Be as detailed as possible. Baby care will be job one, of course, but will you be adding other responsibilities, such as laundry and light cleaning? Be wary of overloading a care provider with chores that might distract her attention from your baby. Also decide how many hours a week you'll need her to work, whether the hours will have to be flexible, and how much you'll pay, both as basic salary and for overtime. Consider, too, whether you will need her to drive or have other specialized skills. Sifting through the possibilities. You won't want to spend endless days interviewing clearly unqualified candidates, so sift them out first via email and phone. If there's no resume to work from, ask candidates for their full name, address, phone numbers, age, education, training, and experience. This may actually be less important than some other qualities, such as enthusiasm and natural ability. Also ask your applicant about salary and benefit requirements. Check beforehand to see what the going rate is in your area. 2 weeks of paid vacation a year is a standard perk. Detail the job description and ask why she wants the job. Set up a personal interview with those applicants who sound promising. Interviewing the finalists. Even the most exhaustive resume won't tell you everything you need to know, and neither will phone conversations or emails or text exchanges. For the full scoop on your childcare candidates, you'll need to hold in-person interviews, preferably in your home. Phrase questions so that they require more than a yes or no answer. It doesn't mean much when you get a yes to, "Do you like babies?" For example, why do you want this job? What was your last job and why did you leave it? What do you think a baby this age needs most? How do you see yourself spending the day with a baby this age? How do you see your role in my baby's life? Will you be fully supportive of my continuing to breastfeed, i.e., on board with using express milk for bottles, timing feeds so that they don't interfere with after-work breastfeeding sessions? This is important, of course, only if you are breastfeeding and intend to continue. When my baby starts getting more active and getting into everything, how will you handle it? How do you believe babies and toddlers should be disciplined, if at all? How will you get to work on a daily basis, in bad weather? Do you have a driver's license and a good driving record? Do you have a car? How long do you envision staying with this job? Do you have children of your own? Will their needs interfere with your work? Will you be able to come to work, for instance, when they're homesick or off from school? Allowing a caregiver to bring her children along has some benefits and some drawbacks. On the one hand, it gives your child the chance to be exposed to the companionship of other children on a daily basis. On the other hand, it gives your child more of a chance to be exposed to all those extra germs on a daily basis. Having other children to care for may also affect the quality and quantity of attention the caregiver can give your own baby. It may also result in greater wear and tear on your home. Will you cook, shop, or do housework? having some of these chores taken care of by someone else will give you more time to spend with your baby when you're at home. But if the care provider spends a lot of time with these chores, your baby may not get the attention and stimulation he or she needs. Are you in good health? Ask for evidence of a complete physical exam, up-to-date immunizations, including the flu shot and a Tdap booster, and a recent negative TB test. Ask, too, about smoking habits. She should be a non-smoker. And alcohol and drug use. A drug or alcohol abuser will probably not be forthcoming with this last information, but be alert for clues, such as restlessness, agitation, dilated pupils, tremors, chills, sweating, slurred speech, poor concentration, and bloodshot eyes. Of course, many of these symptoms can be signs of illness, mental or physical, rather than drug abuse. In either case, should they show up in a childcare worker, they should concern you. You will also want to avoid someone with a medical condition that could interfere with regular attendance at work or the ability to do the job. Have you recently had or are you willing to take baby CPR and first aid training? Though you'll be asking the questions, the job applicant shouldn't be the only one answering them. Ask these questions of yourself based on your observations of each candidate and answer them honestly. Did the candidate arrive for the interview well-groomed and neatly dressed? Though you probably won't require a freshly starched nanny's uniform on the job, dirty clothes, hair, and fingernails are all hygiene red flags. Does she speak English or whatever your primary language is? How well? Obviously, you'll want someone who can communicate with your baby and with you, especially if you speak only English. But there are some benefits to a babysitter who has a working understanding of English but isn't a native speaker. She might be able to teach your baby a second language at a time when baby is ripe for learning one. Does she seem to have a sense of orderliness that's compatible with your own? If she has to rummage through her handbag for 5 minutes for her references and you're a stickler for organization, you'll probably clash. On the other hand, if she seems compulsively neat and you're compulsively messy, you probably won't get along either. Does she seem reliable? If she's late for the interview, watch out. She may be late every time she's due to work. Check this out with previous employers. Is she physically capable of handling the job? She'll need to be fit enough to carry your baby around all day now and to chase your toddler later. Does she seem good with your baby? The interview isn't complete until the applicant spends some time with your baby so that you can observe their interaction or lack of. Does she seem engaged, making eye contact, cooing at your cutie, patient, kind, interested, really attentive, and sensitive to your baby's needs, nurturing? Find out more about her childcare style from previous employers. Does she seem intelligent? You'll want someone who can teach and entertain your child the way you would yourself, and who will show good judgment in difficult situations. Are you comfortable with her? Almost as important as the rapport the candidate has with your baby is the rapport she has with you. For your baby's sake, there needs to be constant, open, comfortable communication between a chosen caregiver and you. Be certain this will not only be possible, but easy. Were there any red flags in her comments and questions? Asking, does the baby cry a lot? Might reflect impatience with normal infant behavior. Silence may speak volumes as well. The candidate who never says anything about liking babies and never comments on yours may be telling you something. If the first series of interviews doesn't turn up any candidates you feel good about, don't settle. Try again. If it does, the next step in narrowing down your selection is to check references. Don't take the word of a candidate's friends or family on her abilities and reliability. As for the names and contact information of previous employers, if any, or if she doesn't have much work experience, those of teachers, clergy, or other more objective judges of character. You might also consider hiring an employee screening firm to do a thorough background check. Some, but not all agencies, do thorough pre-screens. The prospective employee's permission is needed to do this. Getting acquainted. Would you be happy being left alone to spend the day with a perfect stranger? Probably not. And the same could likely be said about your baby, too. Less so in the early months when any loving pair of arms will do. More so once baby becomes more parent-centric. To ease the transition to a new care provider, make sure she's no stranger, no matter how perfect, to baby. Before you leave them alone together for the first time, introduce baby and babysitter so they can get to know each other. Your prospective care provider should spend at least a full paid day with you and your baby, getting to know him or her, but also becoming familiar with your home, your parenting style, and your household routines. That will give you a chance to make suggestions and give her a chance to ask questions. It will also give you a chance to see the care provider providing care and a chance to change your mind about her if you don't like what you see. Just be careful about judging the babysitter on your baby's initial reaction to the caregiver, at least early on, when depending on his or her stage of development, a strong preference for you, especially when you're around, is normal. Instead, look to the sitter's reaction to your baby's reaction. Is she patient, calm, and cajoling while trying to win over baby's affections? Or does she seem stressed and spooked? It's also a good idea to leave the sitter with your baby for a short time that first day. And if your schedule is flexible, to leave for a half day next time, or at least before you leave for a full day. Your baby will probably adjust to a new care provider most easily when he or she is under 6 months old, and may take much longer once stranger anxiety appears on the scene, usually sometime between 6 and 9 months. Trying before hiring. It's always smart to hire a child care provider on a trial basis so that you can evaluate her performance before committing for the long term, and not to keep this arrangement to yourself. It's fairer to her and to you if you make clear in advance that the first 2 weeks or month on the job or any specified period will be provisional. During this time, observe your baby. Does he or she seem happy, clean, and alert when you come home? Or more tired than usual and more cranky? Does it seem a diaper change has been made fairly recently? Important, too, is the care provider's frame of mind at day's end. Is she relaxed and comfortable? Or tense and irritable? Obviously eager to hand back your bundle. Is she quick to tell you about her day with the baby, reporting achievements as well as any problems she's noted? Or does she routinely tell you only how long the baby slept and how many ounces of the bottle were emptied? Or worse, how long the baby cried? Does she seem mindful of whose baby she's caring for, respectful of your decisions, and accepting of your feedback and constructive criticism, if any, of her care? Or does she seem to feel that she's in charge now? Does it appear that she's ignored basic safety protocol? You instructed her that there'd be nothing in the crib but your baby, but you returned home to find a rolled blanket on each side of your sweet bundle, and a plush toy, too. If you're not happy with a new caregiver, or if she's clearly not happy with the job, start a new search. If your evaluation leaves you uncertain, you might try arriving home early and unannounced to get a look at what's really happening in your absence. Or you could ask friends or neighbors who might see the babysitter in the park, at the supermarket, or walking down the street, how she seems to be doing. If a neighbor reports your unusually happy baby is doing a lot of crying while you're away, that should be a red flag. Another option, consider video surveillance with a nanny cam. everything and everyone seems to be fine except you. You're anxious every time you leave your baby. You're miserable while you're away. You keep looking for fault in a babysitter who's doing a good job. It's possible that it's the childcare arrangement, not the childcare provider, that isn't working out. Maybe you can find an alternative to full-time, outside-the-home work or school that allows you to stay at home with your baby part or all of the day. Or maybe a group care situation will actually suit you and your baby best.
Babysitter checklist. Even the best-trained, most experienced babysitter needs instructions. After all, every baby and every family has different needs. Before you leave your baby in someone else's care, make sure she's familiar with the following. How your baby is most easily calmed, rocking, a special song, a favorite mobile, a ride in the sling. What your baby's favorite toys are. That your baby should sleep on his or her back with no pillows, positioners, blankets, soft toys, bumpers, or comforters. How your baby is best burped, over the shoulder, on the lap, after feeding, during feeding. How to diaper and clean baby. Do you use wipes or cotton balls? An ointment for diaper rash? And where diapers and supplies are kept. Where extra baby clothes, sheets, and towels are kept. How to give the bottle, if your baby is bottle-fed or will be getting a supplement of formula or expressed milk. What your baby can and can't eat or drink, making it clear that no food, drink, or medicine should be given to your baby without your okay or the doctor's. The setup of your kitchen, the baby's room, and so on, and any other pertinent facts about your house or apartment, such as how the security system operates and where fire exits are located. Any habits or characteristics of your baby that the sitter might not expect. Spits up a lot, poops frequently, cries when wet, falls asleep only with a light on or when being rocked. The habits of any pets you may have that the babysitter should be aware of, and rules concerning your baby and pets. Baby safety rules. Who is cleared by you to visit when you are not at home, and what your policy is on visitors. Where the first aid kit or individual items is located. Where a flashlight is located. What to do in case the fire alarm goes off, or smoke or fire is observed, or if someone who hasn't been cleared by you rings the doorbell. You should also leave the following for your babysitter. Important phone numbers, your cell, the baby's doctor, a neighbor who will be home, local family members, the hospital emergency department, the poison control center, the building superintendent, a plumber or handyman, the address of the nearest hospital and the best way to get there. A signed consent form authorizing medical care within specific limits if you can't be reached. This should be worked out in advance with baby's doctor. It's helpful to combine all the information necessary for caring for your baby, for instance, phone numbers, safety and health tips, in one place, a notebook, say, or use the What to Expect Babysitter's Handbook. Is he manny enough for the job? If it's true what they say, and it is, that there's nothing a mom can do that a dad can't do equally well, if not better, besides breastfeed, that is, then it's also true that there's nothing that a female nanny can do that a male nanny can't do equally well, if not better, which is why more and more men are signing up to provide childcare, and why more and more parents are hiring them as nannies. In fact, this newer breed of childcare providers even has a name, manny. Though still a minority in the childcare business, the ranks of qualified mannies are growing fast. Who says a good manny is hard to find? The business of hiring a nanny. Hiring a nanny comes with its share of paperwork. By law, you are required to apply for federal and state household employment tax ID numbers and to pay half of your nanny's Social Security and Medicare payments, as well as her unemployment taxes. Make sure, too, that the person you hire is legally allowed to work in this country. Hiring an illegal immigrant is against the law. There's a form to complete to verify employment eligibility. A lot of trouble, true, but there are perks for abiding by the law, besides avoiding hassles with the IRS for non-compliance. If your company offers a flexible spending account, you may be able to get a tax break on the money you use to pay for childcare.
Group daycare. A good daycare program can offer some significant advantages. In the best of them, trained personnel provide a well-organized program specifically geared to a baby's development and growth, as well as opportunities for play and learning with other babies and children. Because such facilities are not dependent on a single provider, as in-home care is, there is generally no crisis if a teacher is sick or leaves, though your baby may have to adjust to a new one. And when the daycare is licensed, there may be safety, health, and in some cases, even educational monitoring of the program. It is also usually more affordable than in-home care, making it not only the best option, but also the only option for many parents. The potential disadvantages for babies, however, can also be significant. First of all, not all programs are equally good. Even in a good one, care is less individualized than it is in a baby's own home. There are more children per caregiver, and teacher turnover may be high. There's less flexibility in scheduling than in a more informal setting. And if the center follows a public school calendar, it may be closed on holidays when you're working. The cost, though typically less expensive than good in-home care, is still usually fairly high, unless subsidized by government or private sources, as in corporate daycare. Possibly the greatest disadvantage is the germ spreading that goes on in daycare centers, since many employed parents don't have another option when their children have colds and other minor ills. They often send them to the center anyway, which is why babies who attend them end up with more than their share of ear infections and other bugs. The unexpected upside to all this early extra germ exposure, often a toughened immune system, and fewer colds and infections later on in childhood. Certainly, there are some excellent daycare facilities. The trick may be finding such a facility in your area that you can afford and that has space for your baby. Where to look? You can get the names of local daycare facilities, which may be nonprofit, cooperative, or for-profit, through recommendations from friends and local message board buddies whose parenting style is similar to yours. By searching online resources for lists of childcare referrals or referral services, by checking with the state regulatory agency, the state health or education department should be able to refer you, or by asking around at work. You can also ask your baby's doctor for suggestions. Once you have a few possibilities, you'll need to start evaluating them. What to look for? Daycare centers range in quality from top of the line to bottom of the barrel, with most falling in the middle range. Online reviews from other parents may give you some clues to the quality of a particular facility, but you'll also want to dig deeper. To best evaluate a center you're considering, look for the following. Licensing. Most states license daycare facilities, checking them for sanitation and safety, but not for the quality of care. Some states, however, don't even have adequate fire and sanitation regulations. Check with your local fire and health departments if you have any questions. Still, a license does provide some safeguards and is always preferable to unlicensed care. A trained and experienced staff. The head teachers, at least, should have degrees in early childhood education, and the entire staff should be trained and experienced in caring for infants, as well as trained in first aid and rescue techniques, such as CPR. The staff turnover should be low. If there are several new teachers each year, beware. A healthy and safe staff. Ask if, or ask to see proof that, all caregivers are up to date on immunizations and have had complete medical checkups, including a TB test and thorough background checks. A good teacher-to-baby ratio. There should be at least one staff person for every three infants. If there are fewer, a crying baby may have to wait until someone is free to offer comfort. moderate size. A huge daycare facility might be less well-supervised and operated than a smaller one, though there are exceptions to this rule. Also, the more children, the more chance for the spread of illnesses. Whatever the size of the facility, there should be adequate space for each child and no overcrowding. Separation of age groups. Infants younger than 1 year should not be mixed with toddlers and older children for safety, health, attention, and development reasons. A loving atmosphere. The staff should seem to genuinely like little ones and enjoy caring for them. Children should look happy, alert, and clean. Be sure to visit the facility unannounced in the middle or toward the end of the day, when you will get a more accurate picture of what the center is like than you would first thing in the morning. And be wary of any program that does not allow unannounced parent visits. A stimulating atmosphere. Even a 2-month-old can benefit from a stimulating atmosphere, one where there is plenty of interaction, both verbal and physical, with caregivers, and where age-appropriate toys are available. As children become older and developmentally advance, there should be plenty of appropriate toys to play with, as well as exposure to books, music, and the out-of-doors. The best programs include occasional field trips to a park, a supermarket, a fire station, a museum, or other places a baby might go with a stay-at-home parent. Parent involvement. Are parents invited to participate in the program in some way? And is there a parent board that makes policy? Will you be required to participate? And if so, will the requirements fit in your schedule? A compatible philosophy. Are you comfortable with the daycare center's philosophy? Educationally, religiously, ideologically? Check its mission statement, if it has one, to know for sure. Good napping conditions. Most babies in daycare or at home still take a lot of naps. There should be a quiet area for napping in individual cribs, and little ones should be able to nap according to their own schedules, not the school's. Security. The doors to the facility should be kept locked during operating hours, and there should be other security measures in place. A parent or visitor sign-in sheet, someone monitoring the door, requesting ID when necessary. The center should also have a system in place for pickups that protects children. Only those on a list approved by you should be able to pick up your baby. Strict health and sanitation rules. In your own home, there's less reason to worry about your baby mouthing everything within reach. But in a daycare center full of other little ones, each with his or her own set of germs, there is. Daycare centers can become a focus for the spread of many intestinal and upper respiratory illnesses. To minimize germ spreading and safeguard the health of the children, a well-run daycare center will have a medical consultant and a written policy that includes: caregivers must wash hands thoroughly after changing diapers. Hands should also be washed after helping children use the toilet, wiping runny noses, or handling children with colds, and before feedings. Diapering and food preparation areas must be entirely separate, and each should be cleaned after every use. Feeding utensils should be washed in a dishwasher or be disposable. Bottles should be labeled with the baby's name so they aren't mixed up. Bottles and food should be prepared under sanitary conditions. Diapers should be disposed of in a covered container out of the reach of children. Toys should be rinsed often with a sanitizing solution or a separate box of toys kept for each child. Stuffed animals and other toys that can be machine washed should be frequently. Teething rings, pacifiers, washcloths, towels, brushes, and combs should not be shared. Immunizations must be up to date for all babies, as well as for caregivers, including seasonal flu vaccines and boosters. Little ones who are moderately to severely ill, particularly with diarrhea, vomiting, fever, and certain types of rashes, should be kept at home. This isn't always necessary with colds, since those are contagious before that button nose even starts running. Or in a special sick child section of the facility. When a baby has a serious contagious illness, all parents of children in the center should be notified by the center. There should be a policy about giving children medication. Also check with the local health department to be sure there are no outstanding complaints or violations against the center. Strict safety rules. Accidental injuries, mostly minor, are not uncommon in daycare facilities. After all, they can also happen at home. But the safer the facility, the safer your baby will be. Be sure the center follows the same safety and childproofing rules you follow at home. Make sure, too, that the toys they use are age-appropriate and kept separate for different ages, and that the center stays up to date on and complies with recalls on toys, furniture, and baby gear. Careful attention to nutrition. All meals and snacks should be wholesome, safe, and appropriate for the ages of the children being served. Parental instructions regarding formula or breast milk, foods, and feeding schedules should be followed. Bottles should never be propped.
Keeping an eye on the sitter. Do you ever wonder what really goes on when you're not at home? Does the nanny spend all day providing your baby with loving, nurturing care, or texting and watching TV? Does she coo, cuddle, and dote on your infant, or leave him or her strapped in an infant seat or crying in the crib? Does she follow your instructions to the letter or throw them out the window the moment you're out the door? Is she the Mary Poppins you hoped you hired? Or the nanny that nightmares are made of? Or more likely someone in between? To make sure the babysitter they've chosen is close to everything they think she is, or to determine if she's far from it, especially if some red flags have been raised, more and more parents are turning to so-called nanny cams, hidden video surveillance, to watch those who are watching their children. If you're considering installing such a system, consider the following first. The equipment. You can either buy or rent cameras, or hire a service that will set up an elaborate surveillance system throughout your home. You can also ask your home security company if they can set it up for you. The least expensive option, a single camera hidden in a room your baby and the babysitter are likely to spend the most time in, can provide you with a glimpse of what goes on while you're away, but it won't give you a full picture. Abuse or neglect might be occurring in a different room, for instance. A wireless camera hidden inside a stuffed animal is more expensive, but is also more inconspicuous, and since it can be moved from room to room, you'll be able to view different rooms on different days. A system that monitors the entire home will obviously offer the clearest picture of your baby's care, but is much more expensive. Keep in mind, too, that how well the surveillance works will depend on how well you survey it. You'll need to be committed to recording at least several days a week. Daily would be best, and watching the video recordings regularly, or monitoring baby and caregiver in real time on your desktop at work or by using an app. Otherwise, you might not catch abuse or neglect until days after it occurs. Your rights and your nanny's. Laws regarding covert video recording vary from state to state, though in most cases, it's considered legal to videotape a care provider at work in your own home without her knowledge. Your equipment supplier should be able to inform you about the legal considerations in your state. The ethical issues are another matter and very much open for debate. Some parents believe that a nanny cam is necessary for their child's safety and that outweighs any ethical concerns. Other parents feel that nanny cams are an invasion of the sitter's privacy and that introducing one implies a fundamental lack of trust. Of course, you can make surveillance a condition of the job, and you can inform the nanny ahead of time that your security system records your home at all times, so it's likely she'll be watched as well. This way, if she accepts the job, she's also accepting the video monitoring. Your motivation. If you're just eager for some peace of mind, a nanny cam might just buy it. On the other hand, If you're already feeling uncomfortable enough about the child care provider you've hired that you're compelled to spy on her with a nanny cam, perhaps that person shouldn't be in your home at all. In that case, you might be wiser to trust your instincts, save your money, and find your baby a sitter you can have confidence in. If you do decide to install a nanny cam, don't use it as a way of screening prospective child care providers. Any babysitter should be thoroughly screened before she's left home alone with your baby. How's the child care? Check with your child. No matter which child care choice you make, be alert to any of these red flags in your baby. New problems with feeding and sleep, sudden changes in personality or mood, clinginess and fussiness that's not linked to teething, illness, or any other obvious cause. If your baby seems unhappy or not to be thriving physically, developmentally, or emotionally, check into your child care situation. It may need a change.
Home daycare. Many parents feel more comfortable leaving a baby in a family situation in a private home with just a few other children than in a more impersonal daycare center. And for those who can't afford or arrange for a sitter in their own homes, home daycare is often the best choice. There are many advantages to such care. Family daycare can often provide a warm, home-like environment at a lower cost than other forms of care, and depending on the provider, can be a nurturing option as well. Because there are fewer children than in a daycare center, there is less exposure to infection and more potential for stimulation and individualized care. Though this isn't a given, flexible scheduling, early drop-off or late pickup when that's necessary, is often possible. The disadvantages vary from situation to situation. Since most but not all home daycare facilities are unlicensed, there may be no oversight of health and safety protocol, though conscientious providers will follow optimum protocol anyway. Some home providers may be untrained in childcare or safety and CPR, or lacking in professional experience. Backup care may be a considerable issue if the provider becomes ill or her children do. And though the risk may be lower than in a larger daycare facility, there's always the possibility of germ spreading from child to child, especially if sanitation is lax. Corporate daycare. A common option in other developed countries for many years, daycare facilities in or adjacent to a parent's place of work are much less common in the United States, though more family-friendly companies are recognizing the perks of offering such a service. It's an option many parents would choose if they had it. The advantages are extremely attractive. Your child is near you in case of an emergency. You can visit or even breastfeed during your lunch hour or coffee break, and since you commute with your child, you spend more time together. Corporate facilities are usually staffed by professionals and well-equipped. Best of all, knowing your child is nearby and well-cared for may allow you to give fuller attention to your work. The cost for such care, if any, is usually low. There are some possible disadvantages. If your commute is a difficult one, it may be hard on your baby, and hard on you if there's a lot of struggling on and off of buses or subways with diaper bags and strollers, or if you travel by car and have a baby who always cries in the car seat. Sometimes seeing you during the day, if that's part of the program, makes each parting more difficult for your baby, especially during times of stress. And visiting, in some cases, may take your mind from your work long after you're back at your desk. Corporate daycare, of course, should meet all the educational, health, and safety standards of any child care facility. If the one set up by your employer doesn't, then speak to those responsible for the facility about what can be done to make the program better and safer. Rallying other parents around the cause may also help.
Safe sleeping and sitters. If you're leaving a young infant in the care of someone else, whether a sitter, grandparent, friend, or daycare provider, be sure he or she is aware of and can be counted on practicing safe sleep practices, including back to sleep, tummy to play. Your baby should sleep and nap on his or her back, on a safe surface, and under safe conditions, and should spend some constantly supervised, wakeful time on his or her tummy. Sick baby work days. No parent likes to see his or her baby sick, but the working parent particularly dreads that first sign of fever or upset stomach. After all, caring for a sick baby when you've got another full-time job to do may present many challenges, the central ones being who will take care of the baby and where. Ideally, either you or your spouse should be able to take time off from work when your baby is sick, so that you can offer that care yourself at home. As anyone who's ever been a sick child knows, there's nothing quite the same as having your mommy or daddy around to hold your hot little hand, wipe your feverish brow, and administer specially prescribed doses of love and attention. Next best is having a trusted and familiar sitter or another family member you can call on to stay with your baby at home. Some daycare centers have a sick child infirmary, where a little one is in familiar surroundings, surrounded by familiar faces. There are also special sick child daycare facilities, both in homes and in larger freestanding centers, sprouting up to meet this need. But in these, of course, a baby has to adjust to being cared for by strangers in a strange environment when he or she is least able to handle change. In order to keep parents on the job, some corporations actually pay for sick child care, such as time in a sick child daycare center or hiring a sick baby nurse to stay with the child at home, which will also require adjustment to an unfamiliar caregiver.
Babies on the job. Take your baby to work day every day. It's far from a common or logistically realistic option, but for a few parents, it's in the mix of childcare choices. It works best if you have flexibility on the job, the cooperation and support of your coworkers, a space in your office for a portable crib and other baby paraphernalia, and a baby who's not a big crier. Ideally, you should also have a sitter on the spot at least part of the time, or be able to multitask easily. Otherwise, baby may actually end up getting less attention and stimulation than he or she might in another childcare situation. Keeping baby on the job usually works best, too, if the atmosphere in the workplace is relaxed. A high stress level won't be good for baby. When it does work, this kind of situation can be perfect for the breastfeeding mom or for any parent who wants to stay on the job and keep baby close by.
Chapter 9, The Fourth Month.
Someone's all smiles this month, and as a result, chances are you'll be too. Your adorable little one is just entering what might be considered the golden age of babyhood, a period of several, maybe more, enchanted months when happiness reigns during the day, more sleep is happening at night, and independent mobility has yet to be achieved, which means your baby will continue to stay pretty much where you plop him or her down, limiting mischief and mayhem. Enjoy this while it lasts. Sociable and interested, eager to strike up a cooing conversation, to watch the world go by and to charm anyone within a 10-foot radius, babies this age are an undeniable delight to be around.
Feeding your baby. Formula amounts.
When you're breastfeeding, figuring out whether your baby's getting the right amount to eat is a pretty simple calculation. If enough's coming out, enough's going in. With bottle feeding, there's some higher math to do. While there's no magic formula for how much formula to pour into each bottle, how much you can expect your little one to drink, or how much will get the sitter through the day or you through the week, there are general guidelines you can look to. Not surprisingly, a lot depends on your baby's weight, age, and once solids are introduced, how much he or she is eating. Infants under 6 months, those not supplementing with solids, should be taking about 2 to 2.5 ounces of formula per pound of body weight over a 24-hour period. So if your baby weighs 10 pounds, that would translate to approximately 20 to 25 ounces a formula a day. In a 24-hour period, you'll be feeding your baby around 3 to 4 ounces about every 4 hours. Babies under 6 months generally don't need more than 32 ounces of formula a day. Once solids are added to the mix, the number of formula ounces can be scaled back a bit. Most babies start off with 2 to 4 ounces per feeding during the first month and increase that amount by about 1 ounce per month until they reach 6 to 8 ounces per bottle. As your tiny one's tummy gets bigger and is able to hold more food at one sitting, he or she will probably drink fewer bottles a day with more formula in each bottle. The average 6-month-old, for instance, could be consuming 4 to 5 bottles of 6 to 8 ounces each day. But because these are just rough guidelines, and because every baby is different, and even the same baby's needs are different on different days, you shouldn't expect your infant to follow this formula for formula precisely. How much your baby needs to take may vary somewhat from day to day and feeding to feeding, and may differ significantly from the needs of baby's buddies the same age. Keep in mind, too, that your baby's consumption won't just depend on weight, but on age, too. A large 6-week-old, for example, probably won't be able to drink as much as a small 3-month-old, even if they weigh about the same. Most of all, remember that bottle-fed babies, just like breastfed babies, know when they've had enough. And enough, for a young infant, is like a feast. So take your cues from your baby's hunger and feed to appetite, instead of to a specified number of ounces. As long as your baby is gaining enough weight, is wetting and dirtying enough diapers, and is happy and healthy, you can be sure you're on target. For more reassurance, check with your baby's pediatrician on formula intake.
Baby basics at a glance. 4th month. Sleeping. Is there a full night's sleep in your near future? Some, but certainly not all, babies are able to sleep longer stretches at night. Think 6 to 8 hours at a time by the 4th month. Total nighttime sleep will be approximately 9 to 10 hours. You should still expect 2 to 3 daytime naps, each about 1.5 to 2 hours. Baby's total sleep per 24-hour day, around 14 to 16 hours. Eating. Not much has changed since last month in terms of baby's diet. Still liquids only. Breast milk. You'll be nursing around 6 to 8 times in a 24-hour period. You should find there are fewer middle-of-the-night feedings, and baby will be drinking somewhere between 24 and 36 ounces of breast milk a day, if you're keeping tabs. Formula. Your bottle drinker will likely be drinking around 5 to 7 ounces of formula 4 to 6 times per day for an average total of 24 to 32 ounces of formula a day. Playing. What's baby playing with now? Play gyms and play yard toys are still fan favorites, but baby will also love to play with sensory toys, toys that trill or squeak or tweet or rattle when pressed or shaken, this month and for many months to come. Watch how baby loves the entertainment an activity mat provides. Baby's reaching for toys now, so look for playthings that he or she can grasp onto. Soft books with high contrast patterns and colors are hot items now, too. Read to your little one and watch how captivated he or she is by the pictures as you turn the pages. Also still captivating, mirrors that capture your cutie's image for his or her own viewing pleasure. Finally, toys that play music, especially in reaction to your baby's movements, such as a kickable keyboard, will be music to your little one's ears now, so be sure to add them to your baby's playthings. What you may be wondering about.
Breast rejection.
My baby was doing great at the breast. Now, suddenly, he has pretty much been refusing to nurse for the past 8 hours. Could something be wrong with my milk?
Something is probably wrong, though not necessarily with your milk. Temporary rejection of the breast, also called a nursing strike, even in non-union babies, is not unusual and almost always has a specific cause, the most common of which are mom's diet. Have you been indulging in garlicky pesto? feasting your chops and chopsticks on General Tso's chicken, honoring St. Patrick with corned beef and cabbage. If so, your baby may simply be protesting the spicy and/or strong flavors you've been seasoning his milk with. If you figure out what turns your baby off, avoid eating it until you've weaned him. Many babies, on the other hand, don't mind the strong spices in their mama's milk, especially if they became accustomed to those flavors in utero through highly flavored amniotic fluid. In fact, some especially relish the taste of breast milk that comes with a kick. A cold. A baby who can't breathe through a stuffy nose can't nurse and breathe through his mouth at the same time. Understandably, he opts for breathing. If your baby has been stuffed up, gently suction baby's nostrils with an infant nasal aspirator. Is that snot too crusty? Soften it first with saline spray. Teething. Though most babies don't start struggling with teeth until at least 5 or 6 months, a few begin much earlier, and an occasional baby actually pops a pearly or two in the first 4 months. Nursing often puts pressure on swollen gums, making suckling painful. When budding teeth are the cause of breast rejection, a baby usually starts nursing eagerly, only to pull away in pain. An earache. Because ear pain can radiate to the jaw, the sucking motions of nursing can make discomfort worse. Thrush. If your baby has this yeast infection in his mouth, breastfeeding may be painful. Be sure the condition is treated so that the infection isn't passed on to you through cracked nipples or spread elsewhere on baby. Slow letdown. A very hungry baby may grow impatient when milk doesn't flow immediately. Letdown can take as long as 5 minutes to occur in some nursing moms and may push away the nipple in frustration before letdown begins. To avoid this problem, express a little milk before you pick him up, so that he'll get something for his efforts the moment he starts sucking. A hormonal change in you. A new pregnancy, unlikely now if you're nursing exclusively, more possible if you've started your baby on supplemental formula feedings, can produce hormones that change the taste of breast milk, causing baby to reject the breast. So can the return of your period, which again isn't usually an issue until partial weaning begins. Your stress level. Maybe you're stressed because you've recently returned to work. Maybe it's because it's bill paying time or because the dishwasher just broke again. Maybe it's just because you had a really bad day. Whatever the reason, if you're worried or upset, you may be communicating your tension to your baby, making him too unsettled to settle down for nursing. Try to relax yourself before offering the breast. Distraction in baby. As your little one becomes ever more alert, he may start realizing there's more to life than mommy's breasts. Ever more easily distracted by the world around him, he may struggle to get a look at it, even as you're struggling to feed him. If that seems to be the case with your curious little cutie, try breastfeeding in a quiet, darkened, boring location. Once in a while, there appears to be no obvious explanation for a baby's turning down the breast. Like an adult, a baby can be off his feed for a meal or two. Fortunately, this kind of hiatus is usually temporary. In the meantime, these suggestions may help you ride out the nursing strike. Don't try substitutes. Offering a bottle of formula when your baby balks at the breast could exacerbate the problem by decreasing your milk supply. Most nursing strikes, even long-term ones, only last a day or two. Try some breast in a bottle. Express the milk and give it to your baby in a bottle if he continuously rejects the breast, though this won't work if it's something in the milk that's bothering him. Again, the strike is likely to last only a day or two, after which your baby will be ready to take milk from the source again. Try again. Even if he rejects it for a few feedings, chances are he'll surprise you and start right back up where he left off. Slow down on solids. If you've started your baby on solid food, he may be eating too much, curbing his appetite for breast milk. At this age, breast milk is still more important than any solids. In fact, solids aren't usually recommended until 6 months. So cut down on the amount of solids you're feeding and always offer the breast first. If rejection of nursing continues beyond a day or two, if you're concerned your baby isn't getting enough to eat, or if it occurs in connection with other signs of illness, check in with the doctor. Wriggling at changing time.
My baby won't lie still when I'm changing her. She's always trying to turn over. How can I get her to cooperate?
Realistically, you can't count on much diaper changing cooperation at this increasingly active stage. And sigh, you're likely to see less and less as the months go by. Not surprisingly. After all, your baby turtle is both frustrated by being immobilized on her back and bored with diaper business as usual. A combo that can set off a tussle with each change. The tricks, be quick. Have all the diapering supplies ready and waiting before you lay baby on the table. And provide distractions. A mobile above the changing table or any toy to occupy her hands and hopefully her interest. Engaging your baby in a song or a cooing conversation or a few belly raspberries may also divert her long enough to get the job done. Or try a change of diaper changing locale. On a pad on the living room floor, for example,